but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Really good friend of mine and a good friend of this radio show, Jerry Palm, is joining us. Jerry Palm, you can find Jerry's work and all of his brackets at palmbrackets.com. That is NCAA tournament, college football playoff. Jerry Palm joining us live via satellite. Jerry Palm, how are you doing, my friend? Do you remember in grade school, did you ever do like a time capsule in elementary school as a class project?
Probably, although I don't have a particularly vivid memory of it.
I remember it all, and we're doing a time capsule on this show, so I'm going to ask you to put some things in the time capsule as it pertains to college athletics. Nothing you need to prep for, but let's start with some of the talk we've had recently about expanding brackets, since you're a bracketology guy. What do you make of Tony Petitti, the Big Ten Conference, saying 24 or 28 or, you know, what's happening here?
Okay, if we go to, say, we'll say 24 teams, when are you going to play the regular season? You know, I mean, that 24-game playoff obviously is a death knell for the bowls. There won't be bowls anymore, except the ones that stick around to serve as hosts for playoff games. But the regular bowl system is pretty much done at that point. That's just getting carried away. We don't need that big a playoff in college football. That's just crazy. You're talking about what? Maybe 20% of the teams in the sport in the playoffs?
What's he trying to do there? Is it that he didn't get traction for four automatic qualifiers in the Big Ten, and now he's saying, well, if you don't like that, we'll just include everyone, and maybe the Big Ten will have eight teams in the playoff?
Well, maybe if we make the playoff big enough, then we can have four automatic qualifiers.
You know, right.
How big does the playoff have to be for us to get four automatic teams? 24, is that big enough? I don't know. It makes me wonder, you know, this is a guy who hasn't been around college sports as long as some of the other people involved in college sports, but he's not exactly a newbie either. But I just, I don't know why. So the people in the Big Ten office needed to say, you know what, maybe you ought to rethink this. I don't think this is going to go over very well.
Jerry, who do you expect this season, you know, as you look at your picks to maybe get to the championship game? You know, I'm going to give my picks later in the show, but who do you like in college football if we're sealing it up in a time capsule today?
I think there's a lot to like for the preseason number one, Texas, even though my current playoff projection has them as the number seven seed. That isn't so much about their talent as it is their schedule. And, you know, the polls, the people who vote in the polls, especially preseason polls, aren't really thinking ahead. This is like, well, we think Texas is the best team, and we think Ohio State's second best, and Notre Dame, Penn State, or whatever. You know, they're not looking ahead. But if you're going to do bowl and playoff projections, you have to know what these teams' records are going to be at the end. And Texas starts the season at Ohio State, where they're a 2.5-point underdog last time I checked, and then they have to go to Georgia later in the year. So they could finish 10-2 and still be the best team in the country. But you got to play at Ohio State. You got to play at Georgia, you know. So that's why I have them as a 7 seed. And you can win the college football playoff from there. You know, there's, you can still be the best team, and you might even have an advantage not having a bye. You know, most of the teams with byes last year lost 3 out of 4. That's 1 year's not a trend. But the bye is not like you're, you know, in the NFL, you get a week off and then you're back at it. You kind of rejuvenate. In college football, you get 3.5 weeks off, 25 days between the championship game and your first game in the college football playoff. And that's a long time to be off. It's hard to maintain your focus and sharpness over 3.5 weeks. Plus the holidays are part of that. So I think the bye is not necessarily a blessing. But you know, we'll see if the trend, you know, if what we saw last year continues, especially now that the byes will go to the best teams and not just conference champions. But it's, you know, Texas, Ohio State, Penn State, Notre Dame, Georgia, you know, a lot of the usual suspects look like the teams to beat. Did I say Penn State? Penn State. I think it's a favorite in the Big Ten this year. Although, you know, they also have to go to Ohio State this year. So, yeah, Ohio State and Georgia have it pretty good. The best teams they play, they get them at home.
Jerry, the thing I don't hear you saying is that, you know, an expanded playoff would result in Cinderella getting to the semifinal game. Is football different than basketball in your mind in that way? That, you know, if you do expand the playoff, how far can Cinderella get in a football playoff maybe versus George Mason in a Final Four or Butler in a championship game in your mind?
Yeah, I think the difference in athleticism, just pure athleticism, is bigger between the elite college football teams and the very good college football teams. And in basketball, you can do, you know, you can make a pretty good run with one or two guys getting hot. And, you know, in college football, everybody's got to be, not necessarily hot, but you've got to be in sync. You've got to all perform together. It's a different sport. And I think basketball certainly lends itself more to upsets over the course of a short tournament where it's all one and done. Of course, college football is one and done as well. But, you know, you've got guys in college football, you know, the talent difference can be significant between the elite teams and the very good teams. And that matters more to me in college football because you depend on so many players during a game. In basketball, you know, it's what, 5 starters and a couple off the bench, and you can make a pretty good run in the postseason if those guys get hot.
Jerry Palm with us. If you are interested in the college football playoff or the NCAA tournament, go to palmbrackets.com. The talk about going from 68 to 72 or 76 teams in the NCAA tournament got tabled as these committees could not agree on what to do. It felt like a temporary reprieve in my mind. What are they after with expansion of the NCAA tournament, and where are your concerns about that?
I don't know what they're after. Presumably money, but I don't see how they get more, unless it's built into the contract, which I'm pretty sure it's not. I don't see how they get more money out of it. So it must be about access, but I don't believe for a minute they're expanding to get, you know, Dayton in the tournament. You know, they're expanding to get, you know, Cincinnati from the Big 12 in the tournament, or, you know, somebody like that, Syracuse, whatever. You know, those, for me, that's the teams they're expanding for. Now a Dayton may slip in there anyway, but, you know, that it's, to me, I'm completely anti-expansion, so much so that I have always favored just going back to 64. But that's not going to happen either. That's tilting at windmills. So I think they want to get some bigger names in the field. And if a couple of smaller names happen to get in as well, it's fine. And I think the only reason that they haven't done it is they haven't figured out how to do it logistically yet. Especially on short turnaround. Like, if they wanted to try and do it this year, they can't play all the games in Dayton. They have to find another facility. I think the logistics just don't work out to do it that quickly, but it's definitely going to happen. I think it's more about figuring out how to do it instead of whether to do it.
I got pushed.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Go. One more thing about that is they also have to do it for the women. Mm-hmm. So that we're not talking about expanding one tournament. We're talking about expanding two. And expanding the women's tournament is more problematic in terms of quality because as good as the teams at the top of women's college basketball are, they don't have the depth of quality that the men's game has yet.
Jerry Palm with us. Jerry, this last tournament, we saw more of sort of the mid-tier teams from Power Four conferences get bids. We saw some of the smaller schools that we love to see in the first and second round not get invited. Is this a trend you expect to continue? The committee appeared to me to be appeasing the Power Four and trying to say, hey, we don't need to do anything. We got you.
Yeah, it's actually five power conferences in basketball because the Big East is really a power conference. But, if they're expanding, they're expanding to get more of those teams in. And the quality of the teams that they're leaving out, especially the power conference teams, they don't belong in this tournament. You know, you can make a case for, you know, Dayton or Boise State or somebody like that, you know, most years, but, you know, maybe not ahead of the teams that got in, but I just wish that that's who they were expanding for. And I just don't believe for a minute they are.
Jerry, basketball, you know, the new look Pac-12, the new world Pac-12 in 2026, is feeling pretty good about the product. But you sort of have your finger on this, whether you were at CB Sports or now with PalmBrackets.com. How much bigger can basketball be? We all know football drives the media rights value, but is there some room for this basketball product to grow still, or do you feel that it's as tapped out as football is in some ways?
I don't know how tapped out football is, but football drives everything. You know, when financially, football drives everything. And, you know, now schools are trying to figure out how to essentially, you know, fund these teams, you know, now that they can. But with, you know, limited resources, I think the thing I'm most interested, you know, going forward in college sports is, you know, not so much what happens to basketball. I think basketball will be fine, but what happens to some of these other sports that schools can no longer have the resources to fund, you know, because of the house settlement? You know, what happens to volleyball? What happens to track and field? What happens to, you know, some of the sports that don't get as much attention or are more, you know, niche kind of sports in terms of the overall scheme of things? Like, obviously, at Oregon, track and field is huge, right? Oregon is probably going to fund track and field, but maybe not everybody can do that. So some of these other sports may not do as well or survive at the level that they have because of the way athletics are going to get funded. And obviously, you know, if some of these schools are unable to fund some sports and they become club sports or they go away entirely, you know, then obviously that affects the postseason in a lot of sports, not just, you know, basketball. Although I don't think basketball would be impacted.
I like Notre Dame in the college football playoff this year. It's a team I left last year thinking about. I know there's a lot of talk about Texas and Penn State and others, but I keep looking at Notre Dame. Talk me out of this position. I like the Irish to be around the title game again this season.
I think I have them number two in my preseason bracket. My only thing about Notre Dame this year is I don't think their schedule does much for them. They really don't have enough, you know, of the big name teams, and that's actually kind of been a problem for them ever since they devoted about half of their schedule to the ACC. And if they don't get Clemson or the one team that happens to be hot that year, otherwise, you know, their schedule doesn't really give them much. But yes, I mean, I think that they'll be right in it again this year. I had them number two, I think, in my projection. So I'm expecting another really good year from them, and they'll probably be undefeated. But then if you look at their schedule, they're at Miami. That's probably their toughest game, and it's game one. They get A&M at home, Boise State at home. You know, who else is going to beat this team? You know, they're going to be double-digit favorites against almost everybody else they play. And it's just, it's a shame that they don't have a better schedule to show themselves in the regular season, but Notre Dame is probably going to be a contender again this season and could win the whole thing.
The Big Ten Conference last year, a lot was made of Oregon, Washington, UCLA, USC coming in. You are a longtime Big Ten guy, a Purdue grad. What did it feel like in the Big Ten with the new teams in? Was it a different feel? What did you learn? What did you see? I know one year does not make a trend, one season does not make a trend, but you know, you got to see it last year through the course of the season, and I have to ask what that felt like for you.
Weird. You know, it's, I mean, those are schools that we hoped to play in the Rose Bowl. A lot of them are now regular season games, at least four of them can be. We had Oregon at Purdue this year, last year, and it was great to see them, even though they annihilated Purdue like everybody else. But it was fun to see them in person. This year we get USC, and usually their band travels, so hopefully we'll get to see the USC band this year. But it is just kind of, it's a surreal experience. It's got to be even more so for the West Coast teams who are playing, you know, so many road games, you know, at least a three-hour flight from home. It's just, it's got to be really weird for them. But I'm old enough that when, you know, I was in school, the Big Ten was 10, you know, so that's pre-Penn State days even. So it's, all of these adjustments have been harder for me to take as time goes on. But, you know, I don't mean that as anything disparaging about the new schools, because I think they're great. It just seems really disjointed. But, you know, we're going to try and go out to L.A. and do a Purdue basketball doubleheader out there this year, and it's nice to get to see some of these teams that we don't normally see, but I liked it better when they were non-conference teams.
Yeah, and here's the other thing I wonder about is Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Maryland, Minnesota, to some extent, Nebraska, Northwestern, Purdue, Rutgers even, a good year or a decent season now has them maybe looking up at two more, three more teams with Oregon and USC and Washington all in the conference. It changes sort of the framing of the season to me because, you know, if Purdue goes out and wins six or seven or eight games, where are they finishing in that conference?
Yeah. Well, right. And you know, and if you're talking about conference games, well, you know, six or seven or eight will do well in the league most years, but you know, you're talking about a couple non-conference games, you're going to be in the middle. You're going to have eight-win teams in the middle of this league. And, you know, teams that, I mean, I guess that could happen. The difference is now that you're going to see teams at the top that don't play each other. I mean, look at the Big Ten last year. Ohio State was the only team that played each of the other three contenders with Penn State, Indiana, Oregon, right? Ohio State was the only one that played all three of them. And I don't think they played each other. None of them played each other otherwise, or those three. And so how do you determine legitimate conference standings when the teams at the top aren't even playing each other? Yeah. I just think that you're going to see weird results in the conference standings just because it's really, football is the only sport that affects, but because they play so few games to begin with. But, yeah, it's weird. So, you know, you could have a conference championship game, you know, with two teams that have pretty good records but didn't play the other contenders. And so they get to play for a championship when they might be, you know, no better than the third best team really in the league.
Is strength of schedule in your mind, is it a little bit of fool's gold? Is it a valuable metric? What do you do with strength of schedule when comparing teams?
Well, it's harder to do in football because of the lack of data relative to, say, basketball, where you've got, you know, 300-some teams, everybody's playing 35 games. That's a lot of data. Here you've got a third the number of teams in college football playing a third the number of games. And strength of schedule is sketchier, but you have to try. you have to have some effort at doing strength of schedule. And, you know, it's funny because I was looking at Oregon before I came on, and Oregon's strength of schedule is not so great this year. You know, that they usually have they get their best opponents at home except Penn State. They have to go to Penn State, but, you know, Indiana's there, Wisconsin's there. You know, it's they don't have a big non-conference game this year. I don't mean to disparage the rivalry, but, you know, they didn't get the better teams on the schedule. So how is Oregon really going to prove itself this year if they don't win at Penn State? What's going to be if they're, you know, 11-1? What's their big win on this schedule if they don't beat Penn State?
And probably Iowa, maybe at Iowa. You know, I don't,
maybe.
You know,
maybe, yeah. Wisconsin. Maybe. Yeah. It's so, but that's the nature of being in this bigger league, is that you can get, you know, such varying, you know, schedule strength differences just in conference games. You know, I think, you know, if you're a contending team like, you know, Oregon is most years, you got to make sure you get one good non-conference game, you know, just to make sure you've got something in case your league lets you down. Prior to, you know, these mega conferences, the leagues were small enough, you didn't have to do that. You were going to get somebody good from your league. Maybe two or three somebody good from your league, and now you can't count on getting any. So you got to do something in non-conference to kind of cover yourself.
Jerry Palm, he's the best. PalmBrackets.com. See his work. Jerry, thank you, my friend.
All right, thanks.
There he goes. Coming up later in the show, John Wilner will join us. You got the bald-faced truth. Our big splash is next.